It is Friday, April the 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, could there be tensions between the U.S. and Turkey over Syria?
It's a big problem because a showdown between Turkey and the United States would be a big problem for both countries and a big problem for NATO.
Poisoned daughter of the ex-Russian spy recovering.
A month ago, the suggestion was that they might never recover, and if they did, they wouldn't recover their full faculties.
Militarizing the U.S. border with Mexico, plus the resurgence of a 1970s hit song. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. Despite having difference in objectives, in Syria, the leaders of Russia, Iran, and Turkey meeting this week in Ankara pledged to speed up efforts to ensure calm on the ground. While Moscow and Tehran back President Bashar al-Assad's regime, Turkey has backed an anti-Assad rebel. At the same time, a senior U.S. official and President Trump wants U.S. ground forces out of Syria soon. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is a White House spokesperson.
The president has maintained all along that our focus has been on defeating ISIS. There, we've made significant progress since the president took office. And under his leadership, with a complete collapse of the caliphate there, we're continuing to make progress. We're continuing to work with our allies and partners in the region. But we want to focus on transitioning to local enforcement and do that over this process to make sure that there's no reemergence of ISIS.
Sanders said the purpose would be a transition and train local enforcement, as well as have allies and partners in the region who have more at risk to step up and do more. President Trump has suggested that Saudi Arabia might be one of those countries. The U.S. has 2,000 troops in Syria, many involved in advising elements of the Syrian Democratic Forces who've been fighting the Islamic State or ISIS. As for the growing Iran, Turkish, and Russian influence, Washington Institute for Near East Policy Fellow Andrew Tabler tells my colleague Victor Beatty this will only ensure Assad will stay in power.
It seems there is no transition in Syria, as the U.S. has outlined, and also that the ceasefire and other kinds of measures are done with that in mind. So not a transition away from Assad, but instead probably ensuring he's there for the foreseeable future.
How successful can these three countries be to bring about stability in Syria that has known nothing but agony for 7 years?
They can bring about stability in part of the country. They can't bring about stability in all of it. And the over one-third of the country that's in the hands of the Kurds, of course, they're the arch-enemies, that particular group of the Turks. So how you would deliver them to this, I'm not sure.
A senior U.S. official, Andrew, said that President Trump wanted U.S. forces out of Syria relatively soon. Quote, we're not going to immediately withdraw, but neither is the president willing to back a long-term commitment. The White House insists that this will not encourage deeper Iranian involvement.
It would be hard to see how a U.S. rapid withdrawal from Syria would encourage greater Iranian involvement. It depends on what the rate is and what the future of that presence would be.
Were you surprised by the president's announcement that the U.S. effort is about to wrap up?
I wasn't surprised because I know he has concerns about it. I think the problem remains that ISIS is not defeated and won't be, and unfortunately, withdrawing quickly will ensure that it comes back. It could come back under this administration, and that would be a major problem.
ISIS is not really the problem, though, is it, in Syria?
ISIS is certainly part of the problem, but it's been defeated. That's the main U.S. mission there. The larger issue, of course, is the way the civil war is shaking out.
The Associated Press is reporting that U.S. forces are setting up new frontline positions around Manbij, even as Turkey promises to move its forces east toward Iraq. What kind of a problem is that?
It's a big problem because a showdown between Turkey and the United States would be a big problem for both countries and a big problem for NATO.
How likely is that in your view?
I think it's likely that there will be a lot of tension, but I think clashes hopefully will be handled more carefully. And we've seen some efforts to do that by H.R. McMaster and Rex Tillerson, the former Secretary of State.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his forces, which last month took control of the Kurdish held town of Afrin, would move eastward to Manbij and other areas controlled by Kurds, whom the Turks view as terrorists.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News.
Poisoned daughter of a former Russian spy attacked with a nerve agent in Britain says she is recovering. Britain, the United States, and other NATO countries have expelled more than 150 Russian diplomats in a show of solidarity over that attack that critically injured Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Russia has adamantly denied involvement and expelled an equal number of Western envoys. Reporter Jamie Detmer, recently in Moscow, describes to VOA's Sarah Williams what is known about Yulia Skripal's improving condition.
She's communicated with a cousin, Victoria Skripal, who's in Moscow and is planning to fly in the next day or two to London. And she also communicated with the Metropolitan Police, who put out a statement on her behalf saying that she has improved, that she's strengthening every day. She's thankful to the people of Britain who helped her, particularly the people of the town of Salisbury, and she hopes to be discharged soon, which is a remarkable turnaround because a month ago the suggestion was that they might never recover, and if they did, they wouldn't recover their full faculties. We don't know much about the father, though. She didn't mention in the statement to the police the condition of the father. The hospital in Salisbury hasn't updated for several days from what they said a few days ago, was that he was critical but stable, although Victoria has said that he apparently is improving as well. But we take a little bit of pinch of salt what Victoria says.
Now, meanwhile, however, the British government is facing questions about possibly whether they overstated the case, blaming Moscow for that nerve agent attack that so hurt the Skripals.
They seem to have made some missteps. They're not backing away from saying it was the Russian state, but originally their claims were based on a pattern of Russian behavior, aggressive behavior the last few years, including some very odd and strange death of Putin critics on British soil, as well as intent, motive, and capability. But 2 weeks ago, Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson was saying that Porton Down, the defense facility, Britain's defense facility, had actually established that it had definitely produced this nerve agent, Novichok, had been produced in Russia. But this week, the head of the laboratory said, in fact, that they could confirm it was a Soviet-developed agent. They had not been able to establish, and would never be able to fully establish, that it was actually produced in Russia. So, of course, the Russian officials, the Kremlin, the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, have absolutely swooped down on this and are making great hay out of it on social media and in press conferences. And it has rather embarrassed the British. They, you know, have some awkward questions of their own to answer, and they've been pushed a little bit on the defensive.
But certainly there have been a number, in addition to this case involving the Skripals, there have been a number of, as you were saying, mysterious, strange deaths of Russians within the UK in the last few years.
Absolutely, up to about a dozen in the last decade, including the assassination of another former Russian agent, Litvinenko, who was poisoned with polonium, polonium-101, and the killers left a trail all the way back to Moscow because they found polonium on the aircraft that they had used to fly back to Moscow. Look, there's an information war going on, and there are doubters and there are allies of Russia who want complete evidence as though this is a course of law. And in this information war, which is being fought, you know, furiously by the British and the Russians, if you make missteps like they have, the British have in the last week or two, then you are rather forced on the defensive.
That is reporter Jamie Detmer speaking with VOA's Sarah Williams. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. Some are saying that illegal immigration is on the rise in the U.S. President Trump, meantime, has signed a proclamation directing National Guard units to border with Mexico to assist U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents. Homeland Security Secretary Kister Nielsen called it a matter of national security.
We continue to see unacceptable levels of illegal drugs, dangerous gang activity, transnational criminal organizations, and illegal immigration flow across our border. In an effort to prevent such a consequence, the President has directed that the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security work together with our governors to deploy the National Guard to our southwest border to assist the Border Patrol. We've recently seen the numbers of illegal border crossings rise from 40-year lows last April back to previous levels. Our current border security and immigration laws fail the American people. The system rewards bad behavior. It does not punish lawbreakers. It undermines our nation's economic interests. We will not allow illegal immigration levels to become the norm. More than 1,000 people a day, 300,000 a year, violating our sovereignty as a nation will never be acceptable to this president.
The troops will not initially engage in law enforcement activities but be confined to a supporting role in counter-narcotics operations, infrastructure construction, as well as aerial reconnaissance. Mexico's foreign ministry warned against the militarization of the border, saying it could harm bilateral relations. It said Mexico was assured by Washington the troops will not be carrying arms. President Trump has been critical of Congress for not approving immigration reform to end the so-called catch-and-release method of arresting illegal immigrants, but releasing them on a condition that they show up at a future court hearing. Most never do. Duncan Wood heads the Mexico Center at the Washington-based Wilson Institute. He tells VOA some Mexican officials see this as a bargaining tactic and the renegotiation of the American Free Trade Agreement, that's NAFTA, as well as a signal for Mexico to do more to stem the flow of Central Americans northward to the U.S.
But I think Mexicans are also quite aware of the domestic political dimension of this move by President Trump. They understand that he's trying to appeal to his base. He's already in campaign mode for the 2020 election. And they see this as being just another wild card move on the part of the American president, which unfortunately has left them in the crosshairs.
But also told us it's affecting the Mexican presidential campaign.
The campaign kicked off last Friday. Up until this point, there's been very little anti-American sentiment that's come to the surface. But now that this move has taken place, all of the major candidates are going to have to make statements reacting to it. And so far, it's been relatively moderate. We've seen candidates coming forward and saying that they will demand mutual respect in the relationship. But, you know, there's the temptation always when you're in campaign mode to try to do a little bit, engage in a little bit of one-upmanship over your rivals. And so you could see that it's very easy for one of the candidates to begin to use anti-American rhetoric, or at least anti-Trump rhetoric in their campaign.
That's Duncan Wood. He is head of the Mexico Center at the Washington-based Wilson Institute. Right now, Shanghai, China, ranks as the world's largest city based on population with more than 24 million people. Chinese capital, Beijing, is a close second, but we could see the world's first 100 million population city by the end of this century. That's the conclusion of a new research done at the speed of urbanization in many fast-growing countries in Africa and Asia. Henry Ridgewell right now looks at these even small cities that could balloon into huge metropolises in the coming decades.
By the end of the century, the world's population is forecast to reach up to 14 billion. 80% of those people will be living in cities, according to the new research.
We're now seeing the urbanization wave heading through China. That's toward the latter part of its urbanization, and now it's headed for India. And then we'll see it culminate in the big cities of sub-Saharan Africa.
That could mean the first 100 million city. The top candidate is Lagos, Nigeria. Today, its population is 20 million. Not the biggest, half the size of Tokyo, but one of the fastest growing. In two generations, Lagos has grown 100-fold. By 2100, it is projected to be home to more people than the whole of California.
Lagos, Dar es Salaam, Kinshasa, these are the cities that are looking at 4 to 5-fold increases in population. By the end of the century, the lion's share of large cities will be, you know, the top 20, if you will. Most of those will be in Africa.
Lagos sprawls across 1,000 square kilometers, an urban jungle of skyscrapers, shantytowns, and everything in between. Its population grows by 900 people per day. The poorest residents, often migrant communities, live in slums by the lagoon. Amnesty International has warned of ruthless forced evictions to make way for new developments, which they claim have left more than 30,000 people homeless and 11 dead.
The threat of being evicted, the threat of being chased away overnight, has grabbed people to the extent that they cannot even walk, operate or do anything in this area.
Across Africa, the median age is under 20. The fertility rate is 4.4 births, and Africans are becoming increasingly urban. Even small cities are forecast to balloon in size. Niamey in Niger could grow from under 1 million today to 46 million by the end of the century. Blantyre in Malawi from 1 to 40 million. Asia too will witness huge urban growth. Kabul, Afghanistan, is projected to hit 50 million people. Despite the associated problems of slums, poor sanitation and pollution, Hornweg says increasing urbanization can be a good thing.
Cities, by their nature, because of our more compact lifestyle, can provide a quality of life higher than anywhere else with less energy per unit of GDP. So cities actually provide a really important opportunity. We won't get to global sustainability without big cities.
Many cities in the West are predicted to plateau or decline in size. By the end of the century, only 14 of the biggest 100 are forecast to be in North America or Europe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And still ahead on International Edition, a Fleetwood Mac meme. And we're joined now by VOA's Doug Bernard with what's trending on social media. What you got, Doug?
Well, the big trender on social media today is social media, and specifically Facebook. And to the point, a verb that Mark Zuckerberg introduced us to on Wednesday, that verb is scraping. So, and it's as bad as it sounds. So here's the basics of it. On Wednesday, Facebook and Zuckerberg announced that what they call malicious actors, these are people who are up to no good, who are trying to steal personal information for whatever nefarious activities. Malicious actors had used tools that were on the Facebook site and scraped, as they say, the accounts of about 2 billion with a B, Facebook users around the world. That's pretty much everybody who uses Facebook, you know, regularly. So what they were doing is these malicious actors were going into the deep web, the dark web, I should say, and maybe accessing phone numbers or emails and that kind of thing from people who had stolen them previously. And then they were using the Facebook tools to match those up with actual individuals. So now they can begin putting names and faces and people and experiences and whatnot with this other personal information. This is bad. This is very bad. This is exactly how IDs, you know, virtually get stolen. Also on Wednesday, Facebook announced that Cambridge Analytica, the tool that was, you know, the company that worked with the Trump campaign in 2016, Cambridge Analytica scraped up, or hoovered up, you could say, the personal information of about 87 million Facebook users, 71 million of them in the United States alone. That's considerably higher than what Facebook had said before. Now, all of this is creating very large problems for Facebook. Their stock is down about 8% in just a week or two. Next week, Mark Zuckerberg will testify before the House. And then the next day before the Senate. So those are going to be some tough days for him. And he's going to have to answer a lot of questions, which I don't think that Facebook is really quite ready to answer yet, regarding what they have or haven't been doing to protect people's personal information online.
And many thanks to you, Doug. That is VOA's Doug Bernard. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
The U.S. construction industry is accelerating toward more unmanned building machines. Take Sam, a bricklaying machine or semi-automated mason that lays 3,000 bricks a day. Todd Barrich is the president of Barrich Masonry.
The drive behind this was to look at some technology to be able to allow me to do more volume and keep my current customers happy.
And consider it takes a drone just 20 minutes to conduct 3D surveys over 90 acres when it used to take all day to do the same job. Tomorrow's technology allows construction firms to do more with less and solves the labor shortage in the building industry. Another example, the automated bulldozer. At McKinsey Global Institute, partner Michael Chewy says the construction industry needs all the robots it can get.
As machines start to do some of the work that people used to do, the people have to migrate and transition to other forms of work.
For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Well, a well-known pop hit song is once again back on the charts thanks to an unusual twist on social media. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald tells VOA's Jim Stevenson about the dreams and controversy a meme has stirred up online.
It's a classic rock classic, and it's back on the Billboard chart. And as you might expect, the internet is behind it all. I think most of our listeners have heard the term meme.
Yes.
Internet memes, these are humorous clips or photos that quickly go viral. They're passed from person to person, and they become this little mini cultural phenomenon. Well, that's what's happened in this case. Last month, a 19-year-old named Mark Villasana, who says he's a meme creator. So apparently this guy specializes in this stuff. He took video footage of the Golden Girls. Now, they're the all-female dance troupe at Alcorn State University in Mississippi. And he took a clip from last September of them dancing to a 1993 R&B song called Stay. They were at a what I presume was a football game doing this dance. Well, then he pulled his big trick. He replaced Stay with Fleetwood Mac's 1977 soft rock classic, Dreams. Mark says he's a big Fleetwood Mac fan. And the music syncs up perfectly with the dance moves. Well, this meme went viral. More than 7 million people have seen it, more 7 million views. And a lot of people actually thought the Golden Girls were dancing to Dreams. And that response was so strong that, like a snowball rolling downhill, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and Dreams has reappeared in 14th place on this week's Billboard Hot Rock Songs chart.
How about that?
40 years old.
Wow.
Now, one of the dancers, Alexis Wilson, says she didn't know about the clip until her friends tagged her, and a few people, maybe more than a few, have taken offense at the use of a white rock song to seemingly prank an African-American dance troupe. Well, Alexis says she doesn't really mind because the Golden Girls dance to all types of music. And to prove it, she shot a brief video of herself at home dancing to the actual song Dreams. And she does a great job. She's a great dancer. I have put the complete story on our Facebook page, VOA1 The Hits. You can see the meme itself and you can see Alexis dancing.
Oh, definitely check it out. And for those of you who were born a little bit later than when that song came out, some of us remember it when it was fresh.
It was played to death
in
the 1970s.
Absolutely.
One of their huge, huge hits. And it's a hit again.
And it's here for everybody to enjoy. And it's your entree to check out the rest of the Fleetwood Mac catalog if you haven't already done so.
They're still going strong.
Always still going strong. Our own Ray McDonald, he presents the Top 20 Countdown each and every week on VOA 1.
And you can also catch us on Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Yes, indeedy, winners come and go. I don't know, never been one, wouldn't know. One more story for you, an Andy Warhol painting of Elvis Presley. Speaking of winners, it's the artist's only full-length portrait. It's for sale, an estimated price tag $30 million. We ought to pick up two or three of us among those of us here in the studio. Painting known as Double Elvis, it's depicting this guy, you know, swinging his hips around, holding a revolver as he appeared in the 1960 film Flaming Star. Anyway, the 1963 black on silver portrait being auctioned at Christie's in New York on May 17th. And if you're in London, it's on display right now until Tuesday at Christie's London showroom. So check it out if you're in London. Many thanks for checking us out today here on The Voice of America with International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. A reminder, the top world news is straight ahead. We hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We're hoping that you have a super Friday.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the identification or location of Maulana Fazlullah. Further, the Rewards for Justice program is offering $3 million each for information on Abdul Wali and Mangal Bagh. All three men are associated with the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan Terrorist Group, or TTP. The TTP opposes the Pakistani military, and among its stated goals is the expulsion of coalition troops from Afghanistan. The group has demonstrated a close alliance with al-Qaeda. Maulana Fazlullah is TTP's leader. Under his leadership, the TTP has claimed responsibility for the December 16, 2014 attack on a school in Peshawar, Pakistan, which resulted in the deaths of 148 people, including 132 students. Fazlullah also is responsible for the June 2012 beheading of 17 Pakistani soldiers, as well as the October 9, 2012 shooting of Pakistani schoolgirl Malala Yousafzai. The U.S. State Department tagged Fazlullah as a specially designated global terrorist in 2015. Abdul Wali leads Jamaat al-Ahrar, a militant group affiliated with TTP. Under Wali's leadership, this terrorist group has staged a number of attacks in Pakistan targeting civilians, religious minorities, military personnel, and law enforcement. Mangal Bagh is the leader of the Lashkar-e-Islam, another terrorist organization affiliated with TTP. Under his leadership, Lashkar-e-Islam operatives have attacked NATO convoys. The group finances itself through drug trafficking, smuggling, kidnapping, and fee extortion on transit trade between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $145 million to more than 90 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. For more information about Fazlullah, Wali, and Bagh, go to www.rewardsforjustice.net. We encourage anyone with information about these men to contact the Rewards for Justice office via email, info@rewardsforjustice.net, by phone 1-800-877-3927 in North America, or by mail, Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.